Which kinds of businesses today? And remember, you're talking to an audience of businesses with less than 10 employees. So who really needs to be paying attention to Gen Z right now?
Well, all of us do. They're the biggest buying force that exists in our culture. So, and they're replacing all of us, over the rest of our careers. So you got to understand how to reach them. And it is, and it's crazy. I still have to say this, but it is still a digital first approach. So, and run into companies all the time that are on page five of Google for their primary keyword of service or product. And that is not going to cut it. You need to own your Google Maps. You need to own a couple keywords to be on the front, and you need to own getting reviews so that, because that's part of the way that these shoppers call services and products is by reviews. And if you're not going to do a full-blown influencer campaign, then you at least need to have a bunch of five-star reviews from satisfied people who have worked with you. So insurance, GMs.
Welcome to Gratitude Geek, the relationship marketing podcast for micropreneurs building genuine, lasting relationships with clients, colleagues, and community. I'm your host, Candice Rodarte, and today I'm joined by lead generation expert, Emmanuel Rose. Emmanuel brings over 25 years of experience in branding and advertising to help businesses thrive. With a diverse skill set acquired through persistent growth, he leads a digital agency and pioneers innovative strategies for client success. As the CEO of Strategic E-Marketing, Emmanuel stays at the forefront of digital solutions, utilizing machine learning for lead generation. With a deep understanding of the digital landscape and the challenges clients face, he provides a leading advantage for all valued clients in Oregon and beyond. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Candice. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
So what I found very intriguing about your bio is that you specialize in Gen Z, but we're not going to start there.
Okay.
We're going to start with your story. So tell us how you got to where you are today.
Oh, boy, that's a long and winding tale. But I've always been interested in sales and marketing all the way since I was like 4 years old, taking the seed sales kit around the neighborhood, and so I could get a boomerang or something, when I was a little kid. But in business, I love to be the storyteller, and I love to make that connection and find out how what kind of where the breakdowns are and how we can help. So I worked for a long time as an employee, and then I had two bad experiences in a row where I had bonuses and opportunities reneged on by the company. And then I was like, well, I must be unmanageable because this keeps not working out. So 13 years ago, I started the digital marketing agency when social media and digital was just really starting to crank and it was unavoidable. And I was basically one chapter ahead of my clients for a long time. And now I still feel like I'm only one chapter ahead because it's changing so fast.
It is changing fast. So I started my digital marketing career in 1999.
Wow.
And let me tell you what's changed a lot.
Oh, yeah.
I want to go back to what you said a couple minutes ago. You said storytelling. So, and you identified being able to be a good storyteller as a kid in terms of sales. So talk about that.
Well, the idea that people always want to help kids, that's the first thing. So that's really easy. And you have the cute face and you are saying, hey, well, I'm doing this thing because I want this other thing. And by the way, you get something out of this besides just feeling good. So that's the easy story as the kid, right? The more complex story that we tell every day in sales and marketing is problem, solution, call to action, agitation, call to action, and that process of identifying a problem in the marketplace and then telling stories as a human being to another human being is magic. And it sometimes it seems like it's so simple that 99% of marketers have lost track of how simple it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. People are always trying to tell you what they think you need rather than if you just tell them a story, they could identify with the story better than you trying to figure out what they need. Just tell a story.
For sure.
I try to teach people and I learned this from a book, Kendra Hall, Stories That Stick. I'm sure you've read it. And it's normal, explosion, new normal. And you can tell that story in 45 seconds or less.
Right.
I mean, you literally can say, I used to get headaches every time I drank, or that's a bad one. That's a bad example. But you know, you can literally tell a story in three sentences, and then somebody might identify with that story and go, oh, wait, I get headaches when I drink. You know? Right. It's a bad story, but
yeah, right.
I used to get headaches when I drank, and then I started drinking tomato juice after I was done drinking the alcohol, and now I don't get headaches anymore. That is a totally made up thing.
You know? Yeah. No, but that's the three part story. Yeah.
Yeah. But if you can, master that story, that is your own personal story or somebody, you know, you can sell whatever you're selling to anybody. Right. Because somebody is going to identify, or they're going to know somebody who identifies. Do you want to talk about that some more?
Yeah. And I think this idea that it's more of the human to human part. I think that's what's got lost so much in digital marketing, is that we have all these KPIs and we want click throughs and we want, you know, dwell time, and we're trying to get them into the next stage of the funnel. And then, well, yeah, but you're still talking to another human that has needs, and you gotta relate to that in a believable, authentic, hopefully, way, so that they can connect with your story, like you're talking about.
Yeah, it is about, it's person to person. Even though you're looking at for the most part, people are filming videos and they're looking at their cell phone. Oh, where's my cell phone in the picture? They're looking at their cell phone and they're identifying with themselves because they're staring at themselves.
Yeah.
You know, you're not, when you're not selling to a mirror, you're selling to a person.
Or this thing, even just in YouTube influencers, where they're like, hey, everybody, you know, they're always everybody and this and all my people. And that is 100% wrong, right? Mm-hmm. It is. Hello, how are you? I'm here today to show you this new car, RV, or boat, or whatever the thing is. So it's this one-to-one thing that is really, it's become a secret again.
Yeah. Yeah. And there are so many people who, I actually heard this recently, folks that sit in their car and talk on their cell phone, you know, to make a video to their cell phone from their car. Mm-hmm. It's that there's actually a name for that.
Oh, that's funny.
I wish I could. You know what? It'll be in the show notes, y'all.
Yeah, I like it.
But so there, I mean, there's like this, and then there's this guy that he shows up on my YouTube feed every once in a while, and he's literally standing in front of his mirror in his bathroom, holding his phone like this, recording himself talking in his mirror. He has millions of followers.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and I said, okay, but you know what? He brings value with his videos. They're weird, but he brings value with their videos. So talk about that. Talk about the value.
Well, I mean, value, it's fundamental distinctions, importance, utility, and worth. So people are getting whatever the message is, they're able to see through the way it's being delivered, right? And 10 years ago, you and I were counseling our clients to spend $1,000 a minute for created video, right? Like we really had a high production value that we required. But now a guy can stand in a robe in his bathroom, and as long as the message is good, people can see through and get the story instead of the person, right?
Yeah, and it is I have a video on YouTube that I recorded 10 years ago after I had a partial mastectomy, and that video has 50,000 views maybe, and it still gets views every week. People comment on it at least once or twice a month. I get comments on it. And it's just me sitting at my desk with a bunch of crap behind me sharing my story.
Yeah. Cause it was gripping and it was relatable and it was human. Right. And
exactly.
Feel it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's not ultra viral. It doesn't have a million views, but I think five digit views is pretty respectable in a noisy, crowded marketplace. Okay.
And
so
you're impacting people. That's really why you made the video. It's because you wanted to help other people who are going through something similar to what you're going through.
Exactly. Exactly. So all this talk about video leads down to the thing I started with. My lead was Gen Z. So how is it that this 50-something-year-old woman and this something-year-old man can talk about a market that is completely unrelatable to us? What do we need to know about them?
Well, we understand them psychographically, right? And we understand that they're the first completely digital generation. They know nothing other than social media and mobile phones. So, and there's a part of us that understand that, right? I mean, we spend a lot of time on social media, more than probably we want, and a lot of time on our phones. So we have to understand that what in this morass of bad marketing that they've seen from day one of when they were paying attention to buying stuff, they've seen every trick and crazy tale and way to get hustled. So that's why that they're so impacted by influencers and by the concept of the social CEO, right? The Kendall Jenners of the world and Richard Branson and Elon Musk. That's why as small business owners, we need to emulate these big players and take time to shoot videos and tell stories about not just our products and services and our business, but also about our employees and about our families and about what we're involved in the community so that we can connect with them digitally, but humanly at the same time, because that's what they demand.
Yeah. You know, oh man, 20 years ago, we lost one of our employees in an auto accident and it waylaid our business for six or eight weeks. And it created a financial burden for us.
Yeah.
Because he was an integral part of our company. Plus, we loved him. I mean, we were a small business, six employees. We might not even had six employees at that point. And losing him was really hard on us. And I mean, it was hard on us. We loved him. You know, he was a part of our family. Not, I mean, not literally, but
yeah, no,
you know, business. Through our business. Yeah. And it just took us forever to recover. And so when I'm out networking and someone's talking about Keyman Insurance in a networking group, and I just tell the story, if we had Keyman Insurance on him,
yeah,
it would have made all the difference in the world. We would have been able to grieve.
Yeah.
We would have been able to take the time to grieve this.
Yeah.
Boy that, I mean, literally he was a boy that we loved. Right. And so that, I mean, right there, the insurance agent didn't have that story to share.
Right.
But I gave it to him, you know, I gave that. And I've given that gift to several commercial insurance agents, life insurance agents, because it's such an impactful story to me 20 years later.
Right.
20 years later, I still get choked up thinking about Tony.
Yeah. Well, that's because he was an important person that you loved. So,
yeah. So that's the importance of these stories. You got to, you know, even if you aren't the insurance agent who knows the story, you can tell my story.
That's right. Well, yeah, you know? Because it's a relatable story. That's what's important about good storytelling.
Yeah. So we never went without Keyman Insurance on the key employees ever again.
Right.
And, you know, the rationale is I don't want my employee to think I'm taking advantage of them. No, you're not. If they are such an important part of your business that it would put you out, put you back 6 weeks or more if they were to pass away.
Yep.
First of all, you need to have, I mean, small businesses are families and you need to have time to grieve.
Yep.
So Keyman Insurance gives you the time to grieve,
yep.
You know, and it's not taking advantage of the employee. It's showing them how much you value them. Well, how do we get down that road?
So this idea.
Personal stories about employees.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So that's the challenge, especially for those of us who are, you know, Gen X or boomers or we were raised in a business culture that said we don't talk about our personal life, right? We're just there to do our transaction and you know, some lighthearted conversation maybe, and maybe a golf game once a year at a fundraiser, but that's what we do for personal impact. Well, these kids demand more than that. And so I see they're like 12 to 27, that age group. So they're just coming into home ownership and insurance and buying cars and, you know, into getting married and families. So there's still some time to catch up. That's the good news. But you really want to get focused on, and this is what I recommend is, you know, 90-second video Monday morning and tell a story either about an employee that you love, an event that you were involved in that you care about, could be product or service, that's fine, or employee of the week.
Oh, I
shoot
love that.
That video, 90 seconds, send it to your marketing team or your agency, and then you've taken care of it and it's off your plate and they can chop that up and put it on YouTube, send it to TikTok, build a blog post out of it, blah, blah, blah.
You can do so many things in video. And it doesn't have to be employee of the week. If you're a small business, it can be your favorite customer of the week.
Yeah, exactly. But it's something from the manager or the CEO telling a story about that shows ethics, values, and importance of things besides just products and services.
So you said that Gen Z is ages 12 to 27. My 25-year-old daughter refuses to be categorized as Gen Z.
Well, that's interesting and fascinating. And we're noticing that there is some dysphoria in that generation that's pretty pervasive. And, you know, I don't like gravity. I don't like time, but it still acts on me.
The thing that I've noticed about her, I mean, she's 25, so she's born in 98. And the thing I've noticed about her group of friends is I don't see, even though I was Facebook friends with them when they were teenagers and Instagram, you know, when Instagram came along, we followed each other on Instagram because, you know, her kids, I was a Girl Scout leader, so they all love Miss Candace, right? But I don't see them on social. I see their parents posting about them.
Yeah.
But I, you know, and my daughter and I have come to an agreement that I just don't share her shit on social.
Right.
You know, you know, I don't, she doesn't like it. She doesn't want me to talk about her. And I respect her privacy.
No, that's cool. And there is a subset of these guys that are like that, this group. They do their stuff by Snapchat or by text. Mm-hmm. And it's either it disappears or it's on text, right? But they're not all TikTok influencers, but a majority of them, right? The biggest group to penetrate are right now are on TikTok for sure.
Yeah.
And then it's interesting because they hold their texting and Snapchat is kind of like sacred space. They're like, they don't want to be marketed to in that. They don't want to be marketed to by email, right? Yeah. Like they're happy to get a notification that says, hey, your package is on the way. But they don't want to get bombarded by, you know, 7 emails a day like I get from Cabela's or somebody like that, right? So
I don't want to get 7 emails a day from Cabela's.
I mean, sometimes I do, right?
I don't care if those North Face pants or North Face jacket is 75% off. I don't want to hear about it 7 times.
True. Yeah. Get overwhelmed for sure. Yeah.
So it is. The way that you figure that out is you identify exactly which segment from Gen Z is your segment. Yeah. Is it the one that identifies with the Kylie Jenner, you know, kind of thing? Or is it the one who likes to Snapchat and likes to be secretive? Yeah, right. I'm talking about my daughter's stuff, even though she doesn't want me to. But we literally talk to each other in Instagram video. So we find funny Instagram videos and we share them with each other, text message.
Yeah.
And that's all we send each other is Instagram videos. I mean, every once in a while we ask questions or she says, I put stuff in the Amazon cart, meaning I put stuff in the Amazon cart so you can send it to me.
Exactly. <You know? laughs> So, that part is never going to be any different, right?
We have come to the conclusion that she will always be on the family payroll.
Yeah, no, that's good. That's important, you know, to have that backstop, right?
Well, until she's got it. I mean, she's a grad student, so we can't expect her to be able to support herself as a grad student. That's impossible.
Right. Yeah.
But I'm really fascinated about this Gen Z thing because my daughter is unique, and so I don't really get it. You know, I don't think a lot of folks, which kinds of businesses today, and remember, you're talking to an audience of you know, businesses with less than 10 employees. Mm-hmm. So who really needs to be paying attention to Gen Z right now?
Well, all of us do. They're the biggest buying force that exists in our culture. So, and they're replacing all of us, you know, over the rest of our careers. So you got to understand how to reach them. And it is crazy. I still have to say this, but it is still a digital first approach. So, and run into companies all the time that are on page 5 of Google for their primary keyword service or product. And that is not going to cut it. You need to own your Google Maps. You need to own a couple keywords to be on the front, and you need to own getting reviews so that, because that's part of the way that these shoppers call services and products is by reviews. And if you're not going to do a full-blown influencer campaign, then you at least need to have a bunch of 5-star reviews from satisfied people who have worked with you. So insurance, gyms, car dealerships, you know, all the things that 27-year-old to, you know, 15-year-old people need. That's, you know, everything.
Yeah. 27. That's when most of them are starting to get married. Maybe a few of them have kids. You know, they've all finished college for the most part. You know, that 20, the ones on that 27 end of that are seriously, there's some spending money going on, you know, some spending going on there.
They're a little bit delayed. You know, COVID changed a little bit of their growth in terms of socialization and those sorts of things. So they're a couple of years behind of probably where you and I were when we were 27. You know, I was already married. I had already started my first business, and I was grinding. These guys are a little bit behind that from what we experienced, but every part of the economy, they're either spending money or influencing spend.
I want to clarify that because it's very regional. So I was 28 when I got married and 29 when I had my first kid, or my only kid. And when I went in for my ultrasound, the technician told me that I was really old to be having my first child.
Jeez, thanks.
And at that point, none of my friends from high school had had kids yet.
Interesting.
My friends, and because I'm from California originally. So my California friends waited till they were in their 30s to have kids.
Right.
So it's really regional, you know, really, really regional. Some of them waited till they were in their 40s.
Yeah.
You know, so it just depends on the life that you're living. So you can't really generalize that everybody's having kids at 27. But, you know, that's when I found my husband. I found my husband at 27. I didn't marry him until later, but, you know, you know, I had a whole lot of life to live before that. Which when you said the COVID delayed people, I think that's not a bad thing, because there's a whole lot to be discovered before you get boring.
Yeah, before you dig into that next phase of life. Yeah,
it's okay. So 2024 is coming up.
Yeah.
What do people need to do in 2024 that they're not doing in 23 or 22?
Wow. Well, I just keep saying I'm going to keep hammering video as the hub of everything that you do for marketing. You know, 5 years ago, we said it was blogging. You want to have blog and blah, blah, blah. Well, now it's video, because video can become your blog. Video becomes your SEO. Video becomes your social media posts. So you've got to get comfortable being on video and telling stories, short stories, though. It doesn't have to be War and Peace. It just has to be like we were talking about. Here's this story about things that are important to me as a person, and some of it's business, some of it's staff, some of it's customer, and some of it's the community. It's easy. We all do it already. We just have to tell that story. Do it by video and then chop it up and send it out.
Is there an optimal video time for what gets engagement in business, not Snapchat, not Reels, but an actual optimal time for a video about business?
You know, it's optimal time. That's why I say 90 seconds, because that's, we know our attention spans are very, very tiny. We're less than the goldfish, right? We're at like 2.6 seconds.
Really? 2.6 seconds?
Yeah. And a goldfish is like 6 seconds attention span. So
you might be right. Wow. You might be right. Wow. Yeah,
they've done the studies. So that's why it goes back to identifying the problem, stratifying your message to a primary target market, writing good headlines and subheadlines, and then taking that and then rolling into a very clear, you know, problem solution call to action, which is what you described with the other book, and you know, just breaking it down into very bite-sized pieces, especially if you're going to be going towards this under 27 demo.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go back to Google Maps, because you said we need to own Google Maps, and then I skipped over that. I want to go back to it.
Yeah.
Okay. So for a business that is internet based and ships, I mean, Google allows you to have a pin now on the Google map. Yep. Where should that pin be?
You can have it be a general area, right? It doesn't have to be at your home. So it should be in your where you live and work. That's where the pin is. And then you build off of that by posting to, well, it's not even Google Maps anymore. It's Google My Business, right? So that shows how old we are. Even just in that.
It's not even Google My Business. It's Google Business Profile.
Oh, there we go. Yeah, even better. I know. It changes so frequently, I've stopped caring what they call it, because I can't keep up with it. Like, I just don't care.
So I've asked that question to quite a few people who say they're Google experts.
Yeah.
And the pushback for a lot of folks that have internet-based businesses is that they don't want to just be tied down to their region.
Right.
But you are right, because people... if you're listening, I'm sorry, I'm calling you out on this. You know who you are with the story. So I had a friend, a networking colleague, who asked for 50 Google reviews as his ask during a networking meeting.
Cool. Love it.
And so I Googled him by his name.
Yeah.
And I couldn't find his Google listing.
Yeah.
And I think I went 3 or 4 pages deep. And he has a name that's very similar to a comedian or a singer. I can't remember if it was a comedian or a singer. But his name was really similar to somebody else's name. So I found a lot about that other person. Yeah. And then I went and I put his name and then business coach. Nothing. His Google listing was the name of his company, which I finally went, oh, what is the name of his company? So I found the listing under the name of his company and it wasn't filled out. Didn't have a lot of information on it.
You could have claimed it.
And his name, well, he had claimed it, but his name was nowhere on the listing. Oh. So I just said, dude, I wanted to leave you a Google review. And this is what I did. And this is how long it took me to find you.
Right.
So talk about that. Add your wisdom to that.
I mean, my thing is that number one, it's a Google property. So if you want to have national SEO or international SEO, you've got to maximize absolutely everything that's Google, right? We know that. And then that you are able to, you have the keywords that you have are still going to show up, even if it's at GMB instead of, you know, the regular just Google search. So there's that part of it. Then there's also the part of it about posting to that profile, which everybody should be doing also, just like they do with all the other social media platforms, so that you're continuing to own those primary keywords. That's my whole pitch.
But one of those keywords should be your first and last name.
If that's how you sell, for sure.
But yeah, if you're doing belly to belly.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so I have actually had a Google post declined. They didn't really give me a reason. So do you have some best practices on what to post on your Google profile?
Well, I've never heard of that before. So that's,
I had a post declined.
Jeez.
I think it was about my podcast and my profile is more about my coaching practice. I mean, I could just change my Google. I mean, my podcast is where I should just change my listing and say I'm a podcast.
That's funny. No, I haven't run into that. And so we pretty much just take posts and spin them so that they're fresh, but you know, focused on keyword.
But the thing with the Google posts is that they're not the same as social media posts. They're a little bit different. So what are those best practices?
They're more like blogs, right? They're more kind of like I would say like a LinkedIn post than a social media post is kind of how I look at it, like a short form blog.
Okay.
But still, you know, I still like to have some outbound links to send them to where they need to go. And I don't think there's a lot of traffic on it, but I think that it has SEO value.
Well, yeah, the SEO is so important. It's not just about social media. It's not about your social media presence.
Yeah, and the inbound links. Yeah.
Do you have an ideal number of words for that post?
Whatever the max is, I don't know off the top of my head, but that's how we manage it. We maximize the characters.
Oh.
So there's some.
That's a
There's
good
some
tip.
Limitation on it. Yeah.
Do you maximize the characters for LinkedIn and Instagram too?
No, I'm not so concerned about that because, I mean, a good LinkedIn post, you're going to have, A, you're going to have your hashtags, right? And B, you're going to add a couple people. And to me, that's where you're getting the, you know, kind of mini virality of it, right? Is that you're adding people who are in your network, in the target market, and then that should get you the reach that you need. And you know, Instagram is more on hashtags or and your existing audience, I think.
So, for example, on LinkedIn, I would do something like, I'm making something up here because I'm trying to learn from you. I learn by repeating. I regurgitate what you tell me so I can learn.
Auditory. That's why you do a podcast.
Exactly. So, an example of a LinkedIn post that might work out would be, I was having a conversation with at Emmanuel Rose, and we were talking about working with Gen Z, and some of the key points that he pointed out were videos where it's at, keep it short, under 90 seconds, you know, and then I'd put those tips and I'd say, to listen to our conversation, click here. Is that a good formula?
And then you would add, let's say you were going after your insurance salesman because you want to teach him how to tell stories. And that you have a whole training program for insurance salesmen. And then you would add like the 3 insurance salesmen that are in your LinkedIn that are like first degree connections who are friendly with you. And then that way they'll comment on it and then it'll go into their feed also.
And would you do that in the actual post or would you do it in a comment?
At the bottom.
Okay.
Yeah.
Really?
I always think of those as invitations into my primary network to interact with my posts so that LinkedIn will give a little bit more juice.
That's a good tip. I've never done that before. I've never just added someone that isn't part of the story.
And then also to never put outbound links into the primary message of a LinkedIn post.
So don't put the listen to, do that
right.
in
you
the
put
comment.
Put it in the comment one.
Okay.
So you make the first comment and then that's where the link goes.
Aha. I have to go back and fix all of my posts because I always.
Well, I mean, and test it and, you know, just do it going forward and see, you know, how the posts perform compared to each other.
But I have noticed on Facebook that if I put the link to the podcast in the post rather than as a comment, it gets less traffic. So
it's probably across the board. Walled gardens, right? They want to keep people on there for their advertising purposes. So you got to find little massage points like that. Yep.
Yeah. Interesting. So is there anything that we haven't talked about you want to chat about?
The biggest thing for small business that we're fighting against the tide, right? We know that because our and so it's important as a small business continue to try new things and test it and keep track of how those tests do. So if you have done video in the past and it didn't produce sales, then you have to say, well, I need to spend 30 minutes this week figuring out what best practices are for video right now and try it again. You know, the way that I'm generating leads on a business consumer level that are still working is social media pay-per-click. If I want to get Gen Z coming into the gyms, I'm going to go TikTok ads. If I want to get Gen X and boomers into the gym, I'm going to go Facebook and Instagram ads. So, and these are small spends. This is a, you know, $50 a week spend, and you can draw correlations to those spends for your ROI, and it makes sense and it pencils.
So you're saying that you could get pretty good traffic on $50 a week doing Facebook ads.
You will move the needle to the point where you can say $50 a week just turned into $125 a week. I'm gonna just keep doubling it until I find whatever that magic point is in this season with this offer and generate as much traffic and sales as I can, but having the advertising pay for itself.
So when we were, my husband, you know, before all this, in the before four time, my husband and I had a custom furniture business and we advertised in a very niche magazine because we had a niche clientele. So we only had one place where we advertised and it was this magazine and the ads were $750 for a quarter page ad.
Right.
I think that magazine came out monthly. So it was $750 a month. Right.
Yeah.
And that's for $50 for $200 a month, probably get a lot more. Cause you really can target down your niche with Facebook ads. I haven't done one in a long time cause I haven't needed to, but you can really, I mean, you can specify, I only want people who live in this town, who shop at this store, or who follow this, you know, follow this, and this.
Right.
Can you still do that where you can say, I want to target people who follow
psychographic and demographic selects. Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can, so for the value of digital marketing like that, pay-per-click ads like that, is that you can really target. I mean, when we were putting our ad in the magazine, it went to everybody who subscribed to that magazine.
Right.
You know, and honestly, we did it for 40 customers because that's what our business could handle was 40 customers. Right.
And you only need to sell one piece of furniture every quarter in order to cover the cost of the ad, right?
Well, we were selling wholesale to gift shops. So it was a magazine specifically designed for country gift shop owners. Okay. So it was really niche.
Yep.
You own a country gift shop. This is the magazine that you got. Yep. And this is where you look for new vendors for your store.
Yeah.
So, and that magazine went out of business years ago because Country Gift Shop doesn't exist anymore. That niche is gone.
Yeah. And it's magazines almost don't exist anymore.
That's true. That is true. Speaking of magazines, we had a featured profile in El Decor magazine and it gave us 10 years of business and just, so it came out in 2008. Maybe 2009. And just within the last 2 years is that image gone off of the El Decor website.
Wow.
So if you can get that kind of publicity, it gives you more than a decade. I mean, it's not there anymore, but we're not in business anymore. So it was going nowhere, but 15 years to 2008. Yeah. 15 years.
Yeah.
That image lived on the internet on Elle Decor magazine.
Wow.
So do you have any tips about publicity? I know that's not your zone of genius, but it's adjacent.
Yeah. You know, the way that I use publicity, I've always had to hire out for, but I do like to use the, PR, the press releases, you know, as a
PR
SEO
wire.
Tool. Yeah. Those sorts of services, simple press releases, that are keyword rich, and you get a lot of traffic from generating that type of content.
Well, and I think that news blogs like to pick up those kinds of mm-hmm. articles too. So it might get placed in 10 different news blogs, which is, you know, even if it doesn't get picked up by a major newspaper, inbound links from 10 different places is still nice.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So what else do we need to know? I mean, 2024 is around the corner. What else do we need to know?
Well, I would say that the most important thing that you can do is take 2 hours a week and go for a hike off your phone, off your social media, and spend some time in nature to recharge. So that's the most important thing you can do to get away from your business and be human, and then come back to it fresh.
I love it. I wish I could remember who was the last person who said that on this show, but you are not the first person to give that advice. And I love that more and more people are giving that advice. So listen to it, y'all. Go outside and play. My most favorite time of the year. I live in Michigan, on the west coast of Michigan. And this is my favorite time. We're coming up on my favorite time of year because I love to watch the ice form on the lake.
Oh,
and
wow.
Then the icebergs get taller and taller. And then you can climb up on them and look out over the horizon and try to find Wisconsin. It's so my favorite time of year to play outside is coming. I know
it.
I'm weird. I go to the beach in the winter, y'all. That's my favorite time to go to the beach.
Whatever it takes to trigger you into sitting outside observing things. That's cool.
I mean, if you have a lot of people like, I don't like snow, but if you've never watched the sunset on a frozen lake, you just don't know beauty. I mean, the colors that it reflect off of the ice, it's just freaking gorgeous. And if it's cold enough, Lake Michigan freezes for miles if it's cold enough. So that's
amazing.
And it's just absolutely gorgeous. So yeah, go outside. Hey, you know, listener, I would love to hear your favorite place to go outside and play. I'd love to hear that. Share it in the comments. Wherever you're listening, share it in the comments. I want to hear. And if you're listening in a place that doesn't have comments, come to gratitudegeek.com and find this episode and leave the comments there. I would love to hear that, because I'm always down to hear about new places to play outside.
For sure.
So I want to get completely off topic in terms of business, because I know where you live. You live in one of my most favorite places in the United States, someplace that I visited many times as a teenager, but I don't live on the West Coast anymore, so I can't visit there anymore. So talk to me about Shakespeare. Do you mind if I share where you live?
Oh, Southern Oregon is a magical place for sure. It's amazing. It's, you know, 1500 foot elevation to higher. So there's a snow mountain in the wintertime. There's the beautiful Rogue River Valley and a couple other rivers right there. And a lot of nature, a lot of time outside. And then, all SOU and the Oregon Shakespeare Festival is a real treat. There's also the Brit Music area, which is in Jacksonville in Southern Oregon. National acts come in there all the time. So it's really a nice blend of culture and nature.
Yeah. And that Shakespeare Festival. I mean, I'm a nerd. I love Shakespeare. I love going to plays. I can't tell you how many times I've seen A Midsummer Night's Dream.
Yeah.
And different. I've seen it outdoor. I've seen it at the Globe in Ashland, Oregon. I've seen it, you know, around a tree in Monterey, California. Nice. I've seen it on a stage with very poor sound in the Woodlands, Texas, you know, wherever the Midsummer Night's Dream is showing, I want to see it. It's not that I love that play. It's that I love seeing how creative people can be with it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. The story is meh, but the creativity that can come into the production of that play is amazing. But yeah, it's something. If you're a Shakespeare fan, or a theater fan, and you haven't been to the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. What is it called?
Oregon
Shakespeare Festival.
Oregon,
You really need to go. It is. I mean, I haven't been. The last time I went, I was probably 18 or 20 years old, and I'm now in my 50s and I still think of it as one of my favorite things I've ever done.
Yeah, I lived in Central Valley in California, and in I think it was the 7th or 8th grade, we got to get on a bus and go all the way to Ashland, which was like 12 hours away or whatever for us, and go. And I mean, I remember it as one of the highlights of school is going to the Shakespeare Festival.
Are you from Fresno?
Modesto.
Modesto. We used to play you in sports. I'm from Castroville.
Oh,
with
yeah.
Monterey County High School. So we were in the same football thing. Yeah. You know, we played Santa Cruz, Modesto, you know, that whole area.
There's probably enough high schools now that they don't have to go all the way that far east.
I think it has to do with size of school, though.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. If I remember correctly, it had to do with the size of the school. But I volunteered as a wrestling statistician in high school, and we went to Modesto a couple of times a year.
Yeah.
So, or Fresno, Modesto, same difference.
Yeah.
You're going to say no, but yeah. So how fun. That is fun. We might have been in high school at the same time. I don't know. You're going to share your age? No, don't tell. But we did the same thing. We would hop on a bus and the school would take us up there. And then my family would go, because my family likes theater too. So, you know, I went multiple times in different capacities. I would love to go back as an adult, though, because the different way of looking at things. All right. I think you've already answered this, but I ask everybody. So I'm going to put a twist on this. Aside from video.
Yeah.
What is your favorite marketing tool tip or technique?
Direct mail.
Really?
Yeah.
You know what? Yeah. It's mine too, but in the form of thank you cards.
Yeah, definitely. Love thank you cards. And I love it as outreach for cold prospecting.
So what does that look like? Are you talking about letters or?
Yeah. So, depending on if it's for myself, I'll send books that I've written and then follow up with a phone call after it's been delivered.
So not mass direct mail, not sending out something to 10,000 people, but sending one thing to a handful of people.
If it's like insurance or a health club or those sorts of things, then yeah, I'll pick demography. So, you know, certain income levels and you know, neighborhoods, those sorts of things, or even gender, if it's the health club, because it tends to be a female purchase. But postcards, I love postcards, right? And we still get great results with sending out postcards with a one offer with a timeline on it, and people bring the postcard in and do a transaction. And it is at a point where we're getting a 3 to 5 times ROI on it. So, I love it because it's like, since we're that old, we know what it's like to do that program, and the kids who are coming up from school, they don't know that one.
Yeah.
They don't know that trick.
And the number's staggering. 3% of businesses send thank you cards and postcards, right? 3%. Right.
Yep.
So that means that you're ahead of 97% of your competition if you do it.
Sure. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And then if you can customize it, or if you know, if it's a thank you card, then you know that person, then you can customize it and you can put something in there that is going to, from what they said or their alma mater's sticker or something. So then you're building a whole nother layer of obligation psychologically. That's fascinating.
Yeah. I love that you said that, because so few people do it. And if it's super personalized, it's even better. Years ago, I was doing a weekly meeting in a coffee shop where people would come and we would hang out, and I would teach them how to send greeting cards. We called it coffee and cards. Right. And I would teach them how to send greeting cards using a digital system. Right. And I made a kind of partnership with the coffee shop owner. And I said, I'm going to bring all these people in, and I would love to send them an invitation to come to the event, you know, to come to the weekly event. Can you give me a coupon that they can redeem when they come? And so she said, yeah, they can have a muffin. If they buy coffee, I'll give them a muffin. So we created a coupon for a muffin with the purchase of a coffee. And I sent it out to my list of people that I invited to the event that I had mailing addresses for.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm going to say 150 of those cards went out and about 15 people redeemed the coupon. But a lot of people who received the card didn't redeem their coupon and showed up anyway.
Right. Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, that's just a strategic partnership that worked beautifully.
Yeah. And that is a little aside, though. If there's anybody who owns a restaurant in your audience, I ask you with great fervency to get your list together of the people who come and eat at your restaurant. It's one of the things that drives me crazy, and I feel so bad that you go into a restaurant on a Monday night and it's empty, and you're like, well, this is a great night for promotion. If only they had a customer list, right? So build your customer list, people.
Yeah. Well, I got to tell you, my favorite restaurant now is it's a place called Shesko. I'm going to give a shout out. It's Shesko in Grand Rapids, Michigan. It's about a 40-minute drive. And if we were on their list and they sent us stuff in the mail, like, you know, come and get a free drinks on us. They do these fresh juices, have a fresh juice on us with your purchase of your meal. We'd probably go make that trip more because we love that restaurant. And I think we would eat there more if we were more incentivized to do it. Yep. It has to be a special trip, though.
Right. Yeah. Or if you get a free piece of cake for your birthday, or that it's the chef's night once a month, and that person's doing something unique or special.
Oh, yeah.
Right. I mean, that's
absolutely something that the VIP customer list, you know, which is, you know, all you need to do to be on the VIP list is give your mailing address.
Sign up.
Yeah. That's brilliant. I hope some restaurants are catching a clue from that.
I hope so too.
Really good.
It's found money for you.
Yeah. You look at that. Look at that. Found money. All right. So we need to wrap up, which means it's time for your moment of gratitude. Emmanuel Rose, for whom or what are you most grateful?
Well, I'm most grateful to my father for taking me out and showing me how to camp, hunt and fish and be outside, and as well as to work hard and make the contribution.
Thanks for tuning in to Gratitude Geek, the relationship marketing podcast for micropreneurs, building genuine and lasting relationships with clients, colleagues, and community. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe and leave a review on Audible, iTunes, Good Pods, or your preferred podcast player. Our theme music is Track 14 by Rev Brock and Soul Lily. Make sure to visit gratitudegeek.com for the show notes, where you can find links to all the resources we've mentioned, including ways to connect with our guest, Emmanuel Rose. I've been your host, Candice Ridardi. Stay groovy, my friends.
Stay groovy, my friends.